Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. California is home to 12% of the nation's population, but we also make up 30% of the unhoused population in the country. The big questions are why? Why are so many people experiencing homelessness here? And what truly can be done to start working on solutions to this crisis? For years, elected officials have run on the platform of solving this issue. And over the years, the unhoused population has ballooned into what we see today in just about any corner of California. But no one has been able to crack the code, despite their best intentions. Now, a newly released study from UC San Francisco has pinpointed the main root causes of homelessness in California, offers some concrete solutions, and demystifies some common misconceptions. It is the largest representative study of homelessness in California in 3 decades. Joining us now to talk about the study is Dr. Margot Kuschel, director of the Benioff Homelessness and Housing Initiative and principal investigator of the statewide study of people experiencing homelessness. Good morning, Dr. Kuschel.
Good morning.
So for context, let's just start with the UCSF Benioff Homelessness and Housing Initiative. What is it?
Yeah, we're a group of researchers, data scientists, qualitative researchers, and policy folks who are trying to demystify homelessness a bit. We conduct research when there are questions that are unanswered and try to translate those to the public and to policymakers. Sometimes we do our own research. Sometimes we're just helping to interpret what's already out there.
Homelessness is something that we are all touched by. It's something that we get a front row seat to. But with your research and at this housing initiative, homelessness and housing initiative, how did you get a better understanding of the state of homelessness and how it has evolved in just the past few years?
So we set out to try to understand homelessness throughout the state, really focusing on homeless adults. We divided the state into 8 regions based on a bunch of factors and basically used a computer model to help choose 8 counties that we felt like put together could give us a sense of the state as a whole. In those counties, we took a huge inventory of every place where people experiencing homelessness might be. That was things like shelters and food lines, but also encampments and parks and the like. And then we randomly selected those places. We sent teams in, you know, our teams going in with teams from those counties, and basically took a random sample of everybody experiencing homelessness there, did about a 45-minute interview to understand what was going on in their lives, and then selected, based on their answers, about 1 in 8 of them to do in-depth interviews, where we turned on the microphone and asked them a bunch of questions to try to understand really the story behind the story. So we did 3,200 surveys and 365 in-depth interviews.
What about those who have language barriers?
So we did the interviews in English and Spanish. Our team was bilingual, bicultural for English and Spanish speakers. And then for any other languages we encountered, we used trained interpreters. Mm-hmm.
So you conducted over 3,000 questionnaires and several hundred, you know, in-depth interviews. Over what span of time were you looking at?
Yeah, we started in October of 21 and we finished in November of 22. So we were in each community for between 3 and 6 weeks, depending on the size of the community during that time span.
Hmm. What took so long for a study of this kind? I mean, homelessness has been an issue that has just been escalating in recent years. And the last one of this nature was from the 1990s.
Yeah, you know, most of the way we know things about people's health or their behaviors comes from what we call household surveys, things like the census. Doing the similar things on people experiencing homelessness is just much more logistically and technically hard. And there really hadn't been one of this scale since the rise of unsheltered homelessness, where it's even harder to find people. And so we really, it's logistically complicated to do. We worked alongside an incredible advisory board made up of people themselves who either are or recently had been homeless who advised us. We hired people from the communities who themselves either are homeless or had recently been homeless to serve as guides and community workers to introduce us to people to gain trust. These studies are hard to do, but I do think it's important.
The study found that when it came to the number one cause of homelessness in our state, it's affordability. It's affordability of housing. What did you learn from the people that you interviewed and questioned?
Yeah, what was really incredible was that the median household income in the months before homelessness, so how much the whole household earned, either through earned income like work or benefits, for a month was $960. This is an incredibly expensive state. And people told us that eventually they just couldn't pay the rent. In fact, there were about 20% of everyone came straight out of an institution, prisons, jails, drug treatment programs, hospitals, and the like. For the other about 80%, 60% of those came from what we called a non-leaseholder situation. They had already been evicted or threatened with eviction and had left and were living with friends or families, often not paying rent. The other 40% were coming straight from a leaseholding situation. And the main thing that really drove people out was just this inability to keep up with the rent. And then when they became homeless, things got even worse. Their income went down further. Their health deteriorated. Things got even worse, and they were in an even bigger hole.
Did you get a better idea of who was experiencing homelessness the most in the state?
Yeah, I mean, Black folks and Indigenous folks are dramatically overrepresented amongst people experiencing homelessness. In our study, 20% of people identified their sole racial or ethnic identity as Black, an additional 6% as one of their identities. This compares to about 5 to 8% of the state. With Indigenous, similarly, 3% said that their identity was that they were Native American or Alaska Native. An additional 9% said that that was one of their identities. These are huge overrepresentations. And we saw what other people have started to see in point in time counts, which is increasing numbers of people who identify as Latinx experiencing homelessness.
This study also dispels some common misconceptions that generally people can have when they think about someone experiencing homelessness. One of them was that, you know, this idea that California is being flooded by people from other states because of our liberal or more forgiving policies. But your study found something different about that, that wasn't true.
Yeah, I mean, 90% of people lost their last stable housing in California. So they were last stably housed in California. Interestingly, of the 10% who did not lose their last housing in California, 30% of those were born in California and were basically coming home. We heard lots of stories of those folks sort of coming back to stay with mom or someone, and then it didn't work out. Really, these are our neighbors, our friends, these are our fellow Californians experienced this crisis.
Do you know how long, did you get a span of time of how long someone experiences homelessness?
Yeah, in our study, the median length of time was 22 months.
It's almost 2 years.
Yeah, almost 2 years. So once people fall into homelessness in California, because the housing is so expensive, because it's so hard, because it's so disorienting to be homeless, they stay homeless for a long time.
There's also this idea or this argument of like pulling yourself up by the bootstraps, right? And so the study also in this questionnaire and interviews, you looked at the picture of, you know, someone experiencing homelessness, you know, trying to find work or a way to support themselves. What did you find out?
Yeah, it was really heartbreaking, a few things. One is that people were really disconnected from labor markets. Something like 3/4 hadn't worked 20 hours a week or more in 2 years. 2 years was actually the length of time people had been homeless. But when we asked people about work, 45% were actively looking for work. People told us that they wanted to work, that they wanted to get back out there. But they told us of so many barriers that they experienced, how hard it was to find a job. They had no transportation. They had no shower. They had no place to sleep. It was just too overwhelming.
Yeah, I talked to people who were experiencing homelessness, you know, living in an encampment, and they had a full time job. You know, they just couldn't afford the rent, or they couldn't afford housing. There are other big pieces of this when it comes to barriers. You have mental health, behavioral issues, substance abuse, and trauma. I mean, these are also nuanced. How did you get a better understanding from actually talking to people, you know, directly impacted by something that is very personal and very circumstantial?
Yeah, I mean, what was really striking was how much trauma people had experienced before they became homeless, trauma in their childhoods, trauma in their adulthood, physical and sexual violence. Sometimes people had been incarcerated and experienced that is incredibly traumatic. People experienced tremendous amount of trauma when they were homeless. 10% of everybody had been sexually assaulted during this episode of homelessness. And certainly people had behavioral health concerns. About a quarter had ever in their life been in a psychiatric hospital. About almost that many, a little less than that, reported that they experienced hallucinations in their life. Right now, about 12% experience hallucinations. Much, much higher percentage experience serious depression, serious anxiety. Those were the main mental health problems. And substance use was certainly common. About almost a third of people were using methamphetamines regularly.
I mean, given that this is something that you research, were you surprised by anything in this study? Because what we're talking about, we've had lots of conversations about these in parts on Insight, but now you're getting really kind of this comprehensive view. Did anything surprise you?
I mean, a few things that surprised me, like people had almost no warning before they lost their housing. We speak a lot about homelessness prevention, but people had a median of 5 days warning. Those without leases had 1 day warning, and those with leases only 10 days warning before they lost their housing. I think in a way, this tells us how difficult this task is that we're trying to do. I think that how disconnected people were from services, from help, how many people wanted substance use treatment but were unable to get it, that was really shattering. And just the amount, the constancy of the violence, physical assault, sexual assault that people were experiencing, and how that was derailing their efforts to get back into housing was devastating as well. But in a way, perhaps it wasn't surprising when we asked people what was keeping them from being housed, the number one response, the rent is too high.
Yeah. I mean, if they're making $960 a month, I mean, that's not sustainable or even realistic in this state, in any corner of the state. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Margot Kuschel, director of the Benioff Homelessness and Housing Initiative at UCSF, about their latest report and study on homelessness in California, which is the first of its kind since the 1990s. So when it comes to solutions and sustainable solutions, the crisis of homelessness has really been a political football for decades. I mean, why has no one really been able to find some meaningful solutions that we, the public, can see, you know, from our front door and in our communities?
I mean, one of the problems is that people often blame the homeless service systems for not doing a good enough job. But really, the homeless service systems is frantically trying to keep up with the crisis and is really just there to manage the emergency. What we need is going to be hard to do, but I actually believe Californians can do hard things and we can do this. We need to bring down the cost of housing. We need to greatly expand the availability of housing for low-income people, and we need to increase incomes. That, at the end of the day, is what we need to do, and we need to keep our focus on that.
Do you see this as a political issue where lawmakers are largely the ones who hold the keys to figuring this out?
I mean, I think that lawmakers can't get that far ahead of the general public. And I think the general public sees people suffering in encampments, is bothered by them, and comes up with a narrative about what's causing this and therefore what would be the solution. There's actually been really good evidence going back for many years that to get people housed, we need to start with the housing. You know, people face so many barriers and we just need to get them into housing and help them rebuild their lives from there. In California, we have only 24 units of housing that's affordable and available for every 100 extremely low-income households. We have 1.3 million extremely low-income households. We're 1 million units short. I hate in some ways to be the bearer of bad news, but unless we can fix that, unless we can make progress, we're not going to be able to solve this problem. The good news, just a few years ago, we were at 21. Now we're at 24. We are actually seeing some forward movement where many states around us are going in the wrong direction. I hope that we can continue that movement, continue to not get distracted by the shiniest, you know, most sensational story. continue to not be distracted by myths that these are people coming from elsewhere or others, and actually just focus on the real solutions.
In addition to creating housing, local government cities, in particularly, they've been taking measures into their own hands. Sacramento, specifically, for example, they recently passed voters passed Measure O, and that essentially bans people from camping in public spaces, and that can lead to fines if warnings to move out of the public area are not adhered to, and available shelter is not accepted. With your experience, are these realistic solutions? Do they actually work, or are they just a window dressing to appease people who are frustrated?
Look, I can understand why there's an instinct to create laws like that. People are expressing their frustration, but it isn't actually helping anything. It's just moving really desperate people from one part of town to the other. And what we learned are that these tickets, you know, are another barrier to getting housing. People having their goods thrown away is another barrier. 50% of people told us not having documents kept them from being able to rent apartments or get jobs. When we asked where their documents went, sometimes it was that they got thrown out in encampment sweeps and things. I understand why people have that instinct to do it, but I don't think it's serving us well.
Dr. Kushal, thank you so much for the time and the work doing this study.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Margot Kushal is the director of the Benioff Homelessness and Housing Initiative and principal investigator of the California Study for People Experiencing Homelessness. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.